today's lesson, which I've entitled The Immoral Person, and because it deals both with men and women, and it deals with the relationship between them, and relationships between them. And I recognize that there is great delicacy in this particular topic. I also recognize that there is not a single person who, one way or another, is not touched by this particular issue. In our own personal lives, in our own minds, in our own experience, in the minds and in the lives and in the experience of others, we know that there is probably no one in this room who is not touched in one way or another by this topic, the topic entitled today, The Immoral Person. It's found throughout the entire book of Proverbs, all the way from the second proverb through the 31st. It is one of the few topics that is dealt with at some length in the sense of connected verses, one after another. Most of the topics are kind of isolated throughout the book of Proverbs, and you have to string them together. But here, in this particular case, particularly in chapters 5, 6, and 7 of the book of Proverbs, you see we have long stretches of passages where this particular topic is dealt with. Well, you know, the word morality, and I teach ethics, among other things, at the university, but the word morality has a very broad application. I mean, it deals with morality or ethics, ethical questions, right across the board. It deals with it in terms of business. It deals with it in terms of our attitudes. It deals with it in terms of our relationships. But when we use the word immorality, it has become more narrowly focused in the minds of most people. It doesn't just mean that we're unethical. It means that we are sexually impure. And so really what we're talking about when we talk about the immoral person is the sexually impure person. And as I say, there's probably no one who is immune. There's no one who is not liable to this particular kind of temptation. And the Lord himself, when he presented the issue, when he talked about the issue of adultery, mentioned not just behavior, not just actions, but also heart attitudes and desires. And so we know that the mind and the spirit and the body, all of these things are involved in this particular area. Now, there are different terms that are used throughout the scriptures for someone who is immoral. Depending on the nature of the relationship. If it's a single individual, single person's involved, the word fornication is used. If a married person or persons are involved, the word adultery is used. There are other terms. We don't need to catalog all of them. But suffice it to say that there is no stage of our life, there is no condition of a person's life where that person is not in principle at least involved in this subject. The book of Proverbs deals both, as I said, with both the immoral man and the immoral woman. I want to talk about both since it's dealt with separately and in relationship. I think you should remember this. The book of Proverbs was written by Solomon to his son, Rehoboam, the future king. This was a young man to whom he was writing. When he says, my son, we need to understand that this is a young man in the vigor of his youth who is being prepared and who is being warned by Solomon, who has gone that way before and who had, sadly, ample experience from which to draw in order to try to instruct this young man, Rehoboam, and others as well. So know that as a context. You say, well, why is so much attention and time given in the book of Proverbs to the young man and to the temptations of the young man? Just remember the audience to whom Solomon was writing this particular book. Everyone is liable. Turn to the book of Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 9. Proverbs 20 and verse 9. Proverbs 20 and verse 9. Who can say, I have made my heart clean? I am pure from sin. You remember the occasion that the Lord Jesus was confronted by some people who had taken a woman caught in the act of adultery, and they paraded her before him. They were trying to trap him into condemning her, and whichever decision he made, he was going to come out on the losing end. That was their intention, at least. And that he, because of course he is God, the Son of God, had divine wisdom and was therefore able to deal with the matter in a way that those who were the accusers hadn't expected. We read this in the eighth chapter of the Gospel of John, where it says that he knelt down on the ground and began to write on the ground. Of course, the hypocrisy of those that had brought the woman before him was evident. For one thing, the law of Moses, they said that to him, the law of Moses requires that she should be stoned. Well, the law of Moses requires that they both be stoned. And they just brought the woman. So there was clear prejudice, there was clear entrapment, if you will, that was intended in this particular situation. And so when he knelt down and wrote in the ground, we do not know what he wrote in the ground, though it is surmised, and I think there's probably a good internal case to be made for it being his writing down of specific commandments. that is likely to be the case, because it says he looked up. Now, at the end of that incident, we see that those who were there to cast stones, he said to them, after he had written the commandments down, if it were the commandments that he wrote, and after he had looked up into the faces of those who were in the inner ring, including the elders who were there ready with their stones poised, he said, "He who is without sin among you, cast the first stone." And as he looked into the eyes of each one, and as he had written the commandment down, and looked into their eyes, and they could read what he was writing, it says they went away. They just walked away, each one convicted, starting with the eldest. So it is the case that that there is no one who is immune, there is no one who is free from sin, there is no one who has the luxury of pointing the finger at anyone else. This is not a case of that immoral person, it is a case of this immoral person, because immorality in thought, in behavior, in action, in attitude, all of that is a liability, is a possibility for every single one of us. And there is no one who is too old, and there is no one who is too young to not be subject to this kind of an issue or this kind of a temptation.
I think Shakespeare started farmed it all by saying, "I think everybody in the world but is filled with sin, but me and thee, and I worry about thee."
That's right. Or someone else has said, "Just because there's snow on the roof does not mean there's not fire in the furnace." All right. I want you to turn with me to the book of Proverbs, chapter 6. The issue, and we're going to be dealing with the immoral man first, as the book of Proverbs deals with the subject, first is the issue of the temptation. After all, every sin is preceded by some kind of allurement, some kind of enticement, some kind of attempt to draw one into that area of sin. And in the case of immorality, a man is going to be enticed by a woman. At least in most cases, that would be the case. Proverbs chapter 6. This is one of the three chapters, 5, 6, and 7, where the subject is dealt with at some length. Verse 25, where we read the following: "Do not lust after her beauty in your heart, nor let her allure you with her eyelids." We need to understand something, and that is that the sin of immorality, as in the case of every other sin, the Lord Jesus himself says this, begins in the heart. It begins with the desire. And so what he's saying here is, the first thing that especially a man is going to be drawn by is appearance. And unfortunately, a lot of guys are taken in by outward appearance. I won't say exclusively the case with guys. I think women are also taken in by appearance, external appearance. But what is being said here to this young man is, don't let the external beauty of the person you're looking at begin to work on your mind and on your imagination, so that lust is then given an opportunity to develop. So the heart and the eyes are where it begins for this young man. And verse 25 also says, "Nor let her allure you with her eyelids." We're not talking here then about a young woman who's passively there being admired, but she is actively enticing. Alluring you with her eyelids implies that there is an attempt to attract, to draw. Probably the eyes are among the most attractive features in most people, and people can look at you in a certain way, and there is no issue at all whatsoever involved. But if they look at you in another way, then there is an issue that's involved. And the eyes can tell. The eyes often do tell the story of whether the person is seeking to have some kind of connection or is not seeking to have some kind of connection. And so I would say this to women, and I would say this to men: be careful how you look. Be careful how you look. There's a difference, there's a fine line between friendliness on the one hand and an attempt to allure on the other, to try to incite on the other. And sometimes one turns into the other. As you get to know the person, you begin a process in which you first are just meeting them in an ordinary, friendly way, and the next thing you know is you're locking eyes, and you're beginning to communicate with your eyes. And he's saying, don't let that eyelid battering and fluttering and gaze begin to work on you. And by the way, that is a very powerful tool. The issue of temptation. Now, I want you to know that in chapter 7, the very next chapter, the entire chapter of Proverbs, chapter 7 of Proverbs, is devoted to a saga or to an incident of seduction. The entire chapter, if you will, could be entitled "The Anatomy of a Seduction." Verse 4 and 5 say, in Proverbs chapter 7, "Say to wisdom, you are my sister. personification of wisdom. Wisdom being, of course, the fear of God and obedience to His word. Say to wisdom, you are my sister, and call understanding your nearest kin. You're going to need help, brother. And you're going to need help from God. That, what's the purpose for calling upon help from God? Young man, that they may keep you, God's wisdom, God's commandments, God's understanding, God's discernment, that they may keep you from the immoral woman, from the seductress who flatters with her words. So I want you to see that not only do we have a case, back in chapter 6 of Proverbs, the one we just looked at, we looked at verse 25, now look at back at verse 24 of chapter 6, it says, to keep you from the evil woman, from the flattering tongue of a seductress. And here, we read in verse 5 of chapter 7, from the seductress who flatters with her words. There is nothing so easy to grab hold of than a man's ego. A little word of admiration, a little word that it suggests that you find this person attractive, makes some people just blossom with, you know, that sounds good. So understand that words are powerful just as looks are powerful, and it is quite possible for both devices to be used at the same time. I'm a verbal person, and not everyone is as verbal as I am. I know as many words as I manage to come up with. But words to me are powerful tools. And words that are skillfully put together have a great impact upon me. And so some people only need a few words. Some people need a lot of words. I'm one of those who probably needs a lot of words because my mind is always working all the time. But be that as it may, flattering words. See, I hate to say that we men are peacocks. Not to mention popinjays. In other words, that begin with P. But the fact of the matter is that it is not hard to cause a guy to lose his perspective just by a certain set of words. Oh, you're looking so handsome today. Man, you are just good enough to eat. The flattering words of a seductress. I likes what I see. Now. Oh, obviously very British. Southern British. Chapter 7 of Proverbs. Solomon is the one who observes this whole scene. Notice what he says here in verse 6. For at the window of my house I looked through my lattice, his Venetian blinds, and I saw among the simple, this stupid kid, I perceived among the youths a young man devoid of understanding, an idiot, passing along the street near her corner. And he took the path to her house when nobody was looking, in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night. This is a young man who has already seen the eyes bat. This is a man who already has been allured by the beauty. This is a man who has already been taken in by the words. Maybe this is a man who has already had a relationship with this woman. And he's going back for more. And he knows where she lives. He's been invited. And he does not cut a wide swath. He does not seek to go away from that person. He goes right toward that person's house. And that's what we're seeing here, is that he's walking into it. Is what we're seeing, and that's the way it is with most people. Most people do not stumble into sin, they walk right in. There is no such thing as an accidental sin, by the way. There is no such thing as an accidental sin. All sins are deliberately chosen. All of them. And so nobody can say, well, I slipped on a banana peel. The only way you slip on a banana peel is to place it underneath your own foot. In the case of sin. What else do we see here in this chapter? We see a woman who is a married lady who apparently is someone who has no principles or scruples, who apparently goes public, in her case, with her allurement, and she is used to doing this based on the way she dresses and the way she behaves. For we read in verses 10 and 11, there a woman met him with the attire of a harlot and a crafty heart. She was loud and rebellious. This was a brassy lady. Not everybody who comes across, who tries to allure, is going to be so obvious. But this one happened to be. Her feet would not stay at home. And she went public. At times she was outside, at times in the open square, lurking at every corner. I mean, this lady had an appetite. Verse 13. Now we have not just the look, not just the batting of the eyes, not just the words, but physical contact. Verse 13, she grabs him. So she caught him and kissed him. With an impudent face, she said to him, now this is the part that is, it should be shocking if you're a believer, but you need to understand what this woman is doing. This is hypocrisy written with a capital H. Look at verse 14. I have peace offerings with me, and today I have paid my vows. Now, I want you to understand what this means. A peace offering is when you're aware of your sin, and you're aware that you've separated yourself from God, or you're separate from God, and you need to be brought back. What she is saying is, I intend to do something sinful, and then I intend to go confess it. I have my peace offerings with me. I'm ready to go. You know, if there's going to be sin involved, we'll just wipe it out with just another offering. It reminds me of a situation. My maternal grandfather was a preacher in the Middle West, in the church where there were bishops. And this particular man was riding in a carriage with the bishop, and he was one of these itinerant kinds of ministers in that situation. And they came across a place where there was a bump in the road, and the wheel axle or something fell off. And the next thing my grandfather heard was this bishop with a string of blue words coming out of his mouth. And the young man, my grandfather, said to him, how can you talk that way? In jest, the bishop said to him, oh, don't worry, when we get back to the church, we'll just sprinkle a little holy water on ourselves and everything will be okay. It was meant to be a jest. But it was that sort of casual, cavalier approach to, you know, the issue of sin and then the seeking of forgiveness afterward that was being voiced here by this woman. It doesn't matter what we do. We'll just go offer sacrifice. And so it's an hypocrisy. It's a cavalier. It's a casual attitude towards a relationship to God in that particular situation. And that, by the way, is absolutely true in the case of all sin. All sin is a turning of one's back to God or against God. You can't be looking into the face of God. You can't be seeking His leadership in your life. You can't be having close fellowship with God on the one hand and then deliberately do the kinds of things that we're reading about here. It requires a hardening of the heart towards God, a rebelliousness against God. That's what it requires to carry out this kind of lifestyle. But anyway, she says, I have peace offerings with me. And today, by the way, I paid my vows. I'm sort of up to speed in terms of my sacrifices. So I came out to meet you. Well, how's that for a juxtaposition? So I came out to meet you diligently to seek your face. Notice, it's not accidental, it's intentional. The term Jezebel is sometimes used for a person who goes out and tries to entrap and entice. And this particular instance, I think it fits the description, at least, that we're given here. You do it deliberately. You don't accidentally show up at the person's place of work with a gift. You do it on purpose. And that's enticement. That's intentional. So I came out to meet you diligently to seek your face. Surprise, surprise, and I found you. Now we go on to the allurement side. She describes how nice it's going to be in verses 16 to 18. All the preparations she has made to make it a pleasant experience. And the invitation, the proposition, is issued in verse 18. Come, let us take our fill of love until morning. Let us delight ourselves with love. Notice what she does next. She says, hey, my husband's out of town. He's working late tonight. We've got plenty of time. He's taking a big bag of cash with him, and he's not going to be back for a while, so we won't have any problem. Notice what she says, verse 19. My husband's not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He has taken a bag of money with him and will come home on the appointed day. So she is, in this case, not only a, say, promiscuous woman, a bold and brassy woman, but one who flouts her marriage vows as well in her deliberateness with which she goes after this young man and the deliberateness with which she times their liaison so it's when her husband's working late or is out of town. See how deliberate this is as we read it in the passage. Verse 21, she persuades him. We've had the look, we've had the eyelids fluttering, we've had the enticing words, we've had grabbing and kissing him, we've had it all spelled out as to how great it's going to be, and he yields. He yields to the temptation. With her enticing speech, she caused him to yield. Now, caused him to yield does not mean that he had no choice in the matter. It just means that it was set up so that it was hard for him to resist. With her flattering lips, she seduced him. Now, there is, pausing here just for a moment, there's something for a young man about an older person that is alluring only because of the experience factor, the opportunity to, you know, to experiment, whatever the case may be. This is the kind of allurement that was being presented to this young man. A woman of experience, a woman who promised a good time, and she did it brazenly, and she did it without any conscience whatsoever. With her flattering lips, she seduced him. And this guy went like an ox to the slaughter. Immediately he went after her, as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks, not knowing that it was going to be fatal in this particular case. Verse 23, till an arrow struck his liver, as a bird hastens to the snare, he did not know it would cost him his life. Now there's more to talk about consequences later, but I wanted you to see what I call in chapter 7 the anatomy of a seduction. That there is intentionality involved. That there is cooperation involved on the part of both the young man who deliberately walks down the street in the direction of the house where, or the place where he knows he's going to likely get tempted, and then there is the intentionality of the woman who comes out and tempts him. And then there is the final yielding to the temptation that we read at the end. And there is the hypocrisy and the flouting of God's law and the making light of God's provision for forgiveness even along the way. Now there are consequences. This was the temptation scene, if you will, and the fall in this particular situation, in this particular seduction of the older woman seducing the younger man without conscience. The consequences. Chapter 6, verse 27. Pastor Graham has quoted this verse so many times in different messages. Chapter 6 and 27. Can a man take fire to his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Verse 28. Can one walk on hot coals and his feet not be seared? You play with fire, you're going to get burned, is the message here. Verse 29. So is he who goes into his neighbor's wife, whoever touches her shall not be innocent. It is never a case of recreational sex. There is no such thing as recreational sex where no one gets hurt, where it's all fun and games. It's always the case that there is going to be something of the heart, something of the spirit, something of the mind, something of the body that is going to be hurt, or several, or all of the above. Chapter 23 of Proverbs. Not only are you going to get burned once, you can get burned over and over again. Because there is nothing so powerful in terms of emotional grab, in terms of emotional control of a person's life, than this matter of sexual attraction and feeling. It is what causes people to continue in an affair, or to continue in a relationship. It is such a powerful emotion. Chapter 23 of Proverbs. 27 and 28 of chapter 23 of Proverbs. For a harlot is a deep pit, and a seductress is a narrow well. You're not going to get out of there easily. Because that young man who was first tempted by the gift and by the liaison when it was convenient and all of that is going to like it and is going to come back for more and want to come back for more over and over again and is not going to be able to get out. And she may want to get out, but he won't want to get out. And then he's going to get his emotions bludgeoned. Verse 28. She also lies in wait as for a victim and increases one more victim, the unfaithful among men. It traps one more young man, either unmarried or married. You're going to get burned, the young man or the young woman. By the way, all of these illustrations can be flipped over. You understand? I mean, the initiator can just as easily be the man as it can be the woman. And all of that series of steps that we talked about that were perpetrated by the woman in this particular example can also be perpetrated by the man. Seduction goes both ways and can go both ways. In fact, it's more often the case that it's the man taking the initiative than that it is the woman taking the initiative. If you had to average it up, I suspect you'll find the man taking the initiative more often. What else can happen in the way of consequence? Go back to Proverbs chapter 5. Proverbs chapter 5. Verses 8 and 9. This is what the young man did not heed. Remove your way far from her, and do not go near the door of her house. Well, he did just the opposite, didn't he? As we read. He went right down the street, directly toward her house. Here it is, verse 9. Lest you give your honor or your vigor to others, and your years to the cruel one. You know, there is no question that ultimately the person who is involved in that kind of a relationship is going to suffer disgrace and dishonor. And they're going to find that their reputation is going to be damaged significantly, as we read here in this particular passage. He's going to get burned. He's going to get trapped. He's going to get shamed once it's discovered. What about the one who goes out and hires it? Chapter 29. Of Proverbs. Men can hire it and women can hire it. Proverbs 29:3. Whoever loves wisdom makes his father rejoice, but a companion of harlots wastes his wealth. By the way, you remember the story that the Lord told of the prodigal son? The prodigal son got his inheritance, he had a lot of money. His cash, he went to a far country and there wasted it, the scripture says, in riotous living. The riotous living included hiring of harlots, it included drink, and included paying for the booze for his friends. And when the money ran out, his friends left. And so did his girlfriends. A companion of harlots wastes his wealth. You're going to get burned, you're going to get trapped, you're going to get shamed, you're going to lose your money in some cases. Here's one that's not usually thought of. Turn to chapter 6 of Proverbs. This is a serious one, by the way. This could be very serious. Chapter 6, not usually thought of, but should be, particularly if you're messing around with a married woman. Proverbs chapter 6, verse 32. Chapter 6 of Proverbs, verse 32. Whoever commits adultery with a woman lacks understanding. He who does so destroys his own soul. Verse 33, wounds and dishonor he will get, and his reproach will not be wiped away. We've already seen that loss of honor. Now, the next verse, the one we don't expect. Verse 34, for jealousy is a husband's fury. Therefore, he will not spare in the day of vengeance. If he finds out or suspects that his wife's been messing around, or vice versa, then you're going to see anger and explosion like Mount Vesuvius, like you've never heard before. And by the way, it's what I would call righteous indignation. It can lead to excess. It can lead to violence, which is never justifiable. But that a person should be outraged at betrayal is absolutely the most understandable kind of emotion that a person, man or woman, could have. They have every right to be outraged, whether they see it or suspect it. Chapter 6 and verse 34. Jealousy is a husband's fury. Therefore, he will not spare in the day of vengeance. If he finds out, he is going to go for this, the jugular, he's going to do what he can do. If he loses his head, he may even kill the other guy. Look at verse 35. He will accept no recompense. You can't bribe this guy away from his jealousy, away from his anger and fury. He will accept no recompense, nor will he be appeased, though you give him many gifts. You can't buy him off. You have done it to him in the worst way you could do it to a man, by taking his wife. And he is furious. Proverbs chapter 2. There is another consequence. Which is the next to the last one. You would think this would be the last one, but it's not. When I get to the last one, you'll understand what I mean. Proverbs chapter 2. This is another consequence. Verses 18 and 19. Referring to the immoral woman and the seductress and so on.